from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
You know what? Why are we beating up on ourselves?
Well,
it's
3:30
in the morning.
I wanted to kind of explain something else, actually, before you continue. And it was just the fact of how the Good Atheist usually plays out. Because recording a radio show when you got no ideas is usually a bad idea. You can try to fill your podcast up with a bunch of junk. You know, hopefully you can find yourself like 10 good topics that you're going to talk about.
This week, another girl got stoned in Afghanistan.
That's terrible.
Well, it is terrible. You can be passionate about terrible.
I can't make fun of the fact that it's a joke within a joke? Relax. Everybody.
I got you. I didn't realize that you were mocking the fact that they were like, it is very terrible.
No, that was not what I was mocking. I was mocking the other thing.
Oh. Well, I appreciate it on a whole other level. And that's all good.
We prefer to kind of go on and say we'll have three basic topics of discussions, and everything else is going to kind of jive into one conversation. Because otherwise, you know, that's our whole appeal. We try to have a conversation. We don't have a radio show. Do you have a cocksucker DJ going,
radio time at the old radio station, 44.9, yeah.
No.
Jacob and the Razz. I'm the Razz.
The Razz?
The Razz.
It's like, because it's like you'd say Ryan, but then you knock the name Ryan, and the N falls sideways and there's a Z, so I'm Razz. That's kind of how, that's the
space
next.
Space efficiency.
That's my next gen name.
Jake and the Razz.
On the MTV generation.
Oh, God. God. I speak about that. Actually, I want to segue into that first topic. Because we were watching a show for our other project, so most of you know that we do another podcast, and we have an entirely other website.
We have
very different fans.
It's like you know those dads who have two families.
Yeah, it's like we have two families. We have,
and we're working on more.
We always more with us. We can't help it. We love projects. Anyways, so we were watching a show called Bully Beatdown, and this is going to be an interesting topic of conversation because. This is something I've been thinking about for a little while.
Explain a little bit about what the show is.
All right. Yeah, that's a good idea. I can't assume that everybody listens to both. This is crazy. Basically, Bully Beatdown features one fighter. His name is Jason Miller. He's a very colorful lad.
Well, we don't have to get too much into
it. I do want to kind of like get people to understand the show.
Okay.
We can take our time. I think people appreciate the show enough to say, well, I had 30 minutes. I don't want it to be 30 minutes. Well,
we could take a nice meandering walk like Gandalf and the Hobbits.
Yeah. Let us have our little moments.
Let us have our pot of, pot. Because that's what they were smoking.
That was what they were smoking. Okay, So anyways, Jason Miller is a colorful guy. So he gets a show where the premise is that he will find, you know, you contact him and say, this guy was a bully or is a bully, and I want you to beat the shit out of him. Now, okay, it's a little bit more complex than that, but the essential premise is that they convince these bullies to fight a professional MMA fighter, and there's 10 grand that they can win. But they make it so that every time these guys lose some, you know, like, because they'll get submitted or they'll get kicked the shit out of, these guys can't survive.
They really have no chance to survive. They need to make their time.
They really do. And a lot of these guys think that they do, and they get knocked down really, really fucking fast. But that was what the premise of the entire idea why I discussed this show, which seems completely banal, is actually that there's something fascinating that happens. At the end of the show, when the bully has been beat down, the people that he bullied confront him and say, how does it feel? He has to hand them the money that he lost. Because when you lose points, but you also lose money. And that money goes directly to your victim. So by the end, you're either left with a few hundred dollars or most of the cases, $0 if they find a competent guy to beat on. So the interesting thing that happens right at the end, at least the first show that we watched, and I'm pretty sure most of the other shows are like this, at least from seeing the previews, is that the bullies are suddenly, wow, I really, That really made me think. And they all seem to have this reaction like that this was really something that needed to happen. Somebody needed to be taken down a few motherfucking pegs. And the response is, what's interesting about it is that I think that it's probably almost universal. Once a guy gets his ass kicked, it's hard being a bully anymore. And that segues me into what I wanted to talk about before, which was empathy. And that's the one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot. Because empathy, at least for me, signifies a way that human beings can develop a trusting relationship with one another. I can feel your pain. And how powerful is it that the fact of the matter is there are medical conditions in which you will feel sympathy pains for someone. You may even feel pregnancy sympathy pains, like a man can lactate and, you know, have mood swings and stuff like that. That's pretty damn scary. But that shows you a pretty high level of empathy. And, you know, I guess it was interesting to see how that's applied in just physical confrontations. You know, like, how does even a physical confrontation, a fucking fist fight, change your, you know, conception of reality? Like, he had his world rocked. Like, one fist at a time.
Yeah, he was living in a bit of a delusional world. I still don't know. I think there's that initial shock, and then people fall right back into it. You know that whole Scrooge effect where they show Scrooge everything? And
yeah, he's like, buy a turkey for everyone.
He was a changed man, but I swear to God, go back there next month, he's going to be a cocksucker all over again.
Yeah, but you know why people become cocksuckers again?
And you know what? That's why people get born again, again and again and again, because they fucking start, and then they slide, and then they need a clean slate, so they got to be born again. I can understand why that is a very appealing idea, because you could get right back into your delusion. You get knocked down and beat up, and you sin, and you fail, and you just go, and you get born again. You get to start all over again.
You're saying the born-again strategy is saying, well, I can find my way back to the delusion. Mm-hmm. But I'm, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that do that. And the reason they do that most of the time is because human beings are human beings. You're going to slip up. You're going to fuck up. You are going to act like an animal. So that whole time your preacher's like, don't you masturbate, or don't you cheat on your wife, or all this other kind of stuff. You're just going to do it because you're, you know, hairless ape. All right. You're designed through the process of evolution to want to do all kinds of crazy things. Yep. You're a crazy monkey!
All of those crazy little twinges in your spinal cord that are kind of making you do things you don't understand. And you're just like, it seems like a good idea at the time.
Yeah,
like,
the good time. Why did I lick that pole? Why did I do that?
Yep.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
Your consciousness didn't catch that fucking what your spinal cord tricked you into doing. It's like, no, don't fucking shoot that guy.
Stupid monkey, what are you doing?
Don't pull out the gun and shoot that guy because he stared at your girl. Don't do that. It's like,
don't do that, you damn ape.
Yep.
The fear that you get from being beaten down, you know, is a powerful fear. And I think that that's what gets to people. They were like, for 3 minutes, someone was hurting me and I couldn't do anything about it. Like, I wasn't strong enough and the guy wouldn't stop. Mm. And I couldn't defeat him. And I think that that's a scary realization for people. And you realize something when that happens, that you need other people. You know, and I think that that's kind of what he woke up to. So it's hard to go back to I don't need anyone else. Mm. Like Scrooge, you know, like you might say, well, maybe he's going to convert back. I think that the joy that he felt when he just opened up is kind of a hard thing to close again. You need a lot of terrible things to happen simultaneously to get you back to that bitter little bastard. Mm. So I guess in his case, in most of these guys' cases, I think that once you're really shown that, you're going to have like much more empathy and you're going to naturally respond to people that are in trouble. I mean, I could even say that a guy like that, I wouldn't be surprised if he was so affected by his own actions and felt guilt, like looking back, that he might try to turn things around. That's what people do. They realize, like, holy shit, I was a piece of crap, and they feel a dedication to right the wrongs that they've done before. And that's where empathy comes in, because it's even retroactive. You know, people will try to fix the things that they've done, but they require that big fucking push right out of their delusion, saying, like, what are you doing, moron? So I thought that that was an interesting way to interpret what is actually a pretty crappy show, just because of the production value, man. It's like the MTV thing.
Oh, yeah, you know how it is with these kids nowadays. I mean, it was...
These kids nowadays? Come on, listen to yourself.
Seriously, I'm not joking around. This was the fight equivalent of Pimp My Ride, and it is a stupid show. And this is how you associate value with a show. Would you ever rewatch that episode?
It wasn't necessary. Every single time they went to a commercial break and came back, they were telling you again and again what was happening. I mean, it's a simple premise, but they just felt that they had to roll through it every commercial break.
Here's the funny thing. It's a simple premise, but it's a complex premise, so they have to spend like 2 minutes after every commercial break explaining what the fuck is going on.
I wish they just had a thing, like a ticker. You know, a CNN ticker of what is going on here, because you're like, who are these characters? What the hell is going on? If I watch it at minute 15, I will be very confused.
Anyways, we can't review it too much because that's pretty much going right over into the realm of the other thing, and that's just an easy slip-up to do. So right. I'm all good with rolling on to the next topic.
Okay, well, the next topic I wanted to talk about is Section 13 of the Canadian Human Rights Act. The premise of Section 13 is to try to limit the amount of hate speech that goes out. So it is a committee that basically it's like a trial. It's a tribunal. So they will look at anything that you put out there. So if you create a website and you're in Canada and you say, I hate all Christians should, you know, burn in hell forever for what they did or so on and so forth, you could fall within their jurisdiction. And what they're basically designed to do is to limit the freedom of your speech. Like, they want to do this. They have now said hate speech is illegal, and we are going to... Well, right now they're fining. Like, that's they shut you down, and they fine you. And it's really interesting because in the U.S., a lot of people are talking about that. It changed significantly. Before, it was enacted in the 70s because all these telephone machines were dialing people's number and inciting hatred. So the Canadian government decided in a reactionary way, because it's the Canadian government, we have to do something.
The overreacting Canadian government.
Exactly. The hypochondriac Canadian government decided that we needed a law to prevent people from being able to telephony hatred. And it sounded reasonable at the time, because how much do you love telemarketer? Okay, well, how about a telemarketer of hate? Like, that would be a very bad day. Of course people would try to stop that. But they also decided after the events of September 11th that was also going to include all methods of telecommunication, including the internet. And now that sort of like opens the door for a lot of trouble, because the internet isn't exactly the kind of place that you want to start policing. That's not the way that it was designed, but the Canadian government seems to think otherwise. And, it's pretty scary when you look at the fact that there have been, I don't know the numbers right offhand, but there have been a number of times where this has gone, the commission has come together and has, you know, like there's been a trial, because you have to basically go up to these guys and prove that what you were doing wasn't hate speech. So it's you're guilty until you're proven innocent here. And it's 100% conviction rates. Like, no one has ever won, which seems to me very curious that no one can seem to win. Like, that 100% is very high.
Well, it depends on 100% of what, 10 cases or how many cases? Because if they're only going after the people that are fucking guilty, then I'd say 100% is a pretty reasonable number to hit on. You know?
My question is, I don't know if we've ever had this discussion about laws in Europe that deals with, you know, Holocaust denial laws. Like, that's what they...
We've never really had that much of a talk about it. You want to go into it?
Well, that's the reason why I wanted to bring it up. Basically because I find that this is the Canadian equivalent of, Holocaust denial laws. And I find that I agree with Noam Chomsky, you know, and Noam Chomsky is a Jew, all right, by heritage. He is Jewish by heritage. So he has some stake in this, but he says that, you know, Holocaust denial laws are wrong, okay? And he says they're wrong because you shouldn't jail people for what they think or say. You know, if they just think, well, the Holocaust didn't happen, that is not... You should not lock them in a prison cell. That seems to me insane. I mean, like, we should be able to take care of these guys ourselves. Do we really need to put them in jail? Are we that afraid of them?
I don't know, man. Here's the thing. I'm probably going to sound like the right-wing fucking Hasselback from The View.
It should be very interesting.
On this one here. But I honestly think that there are a lot of things that are wrong that you just have to do to deal with all the shitty situations in life.
I think it's too close. Like, you assume...
It's like, you know what? You could fucking say the exact same thing. You know what? From a moral standpoint, abortion is wrong. And you're like, yeah, you could, but so what? We got to do them. We got to do it. Gotta do it.
I understand, appreciate your practicality in this matter, but that is exactly what is scary about those kinds of things, because it's the slippery slope. It's the... You originally had the best of intentions. You know, But the road to hell is paved in good intentions, and definitely laws, censorship laws, that try to define, well, what qualifies as hate. You know, like, for instance, now the qualifications of what, you know, applies as of hatred could be something as ambiguous as those that UN resolution that calls for nations to make defamation of religion illegal. I'm like, that's just that one extra step you need to all of a sudden, holy shit, they're censoring me talking about religion. It's now become illegal. That's two steps, bro. It may seem like it's far away. It is not far away. The resolution is just waiting to be adopted suddenly and made, you know, like it would work perfectly in conjunction with Section 13. There is no, you know, like, there's no ambiguity there. It is perfect. And that's kind of like the puzzle of the puzzle pieces align very nicely with people that have a very narrow-minded concept of what is allowed to be said. And there's a lot of people that were like, I don't want you to say anything. And they are very strong minority of people. And you can't let these guys have any control over what you say. At first you thought you had your best intentions. Well, I don't want people to be upset. Oh, no, people being upset by what you say? I'm like, that's the price that we have to pay. People will say some horrible shit. But we can deal with them without having to throw them in jail, is what I'm saying.
I don't know.
For the second time.
Look at it like this. What's the name of the, not the Landover Baptist, not the satirical ones. What's the name of those, the people who go to...
WorldNet Daily is the real conservative, crazy Christian one?
No, the one that goes and pickets gay funerals and soldier funerals and everything like that.
Oh, God. Oh, those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, I just forgot their name.
But here's the whole deal is basically... You make these laws to deal with people like that. And yes, unfortunately, the laws are misapplied all the fucking time, and it's the same way with all laws. Every single fucking law that they put in the book, they will bend to nail you if they decide to nail you. And that's just an overall big problem with society. Going down on this one specific thing, I don't know, it just seems a little bit, again, I'm going to be right-wing and call you a conspiracy theory nut.
It's not a conspiracy theory nut. Let me put it another way. What do you think is a better way to deal with those protesters at funerals and say, basically, well, we're glad that your son died because you support a fag nation, which is what they'd say.
Throw him in jail.
Well, here's basically, like, throwing him in jail only makes them martyrs anyways to that cause. The only real solution I would have is saying, like, and already the solution is implemented, is that whenever those guys show up, there's always a group of people that come over and then just create a wall around them.
I know,
and
but it's like, ridiculous that these people are allowed to do this. Here's the whole thing, is that there needs to be laws. These kinds of laws exist to stop people like that from doing things like that, and they're not even strong enough to stop them from doing that. And that's because, oh, it wouldn't be right to limit people's freedom to be complete and utter dick faces.
So what? So somebody's a dick face.
But here's the thing.
Freaking who throw them in jail? You are insane. You are an asshole bag.
These people are stepping through a dick face loophole. You know what I mean? These loopholes do not exist all throughout society.
Seal the loophole, dude. That's a bad idea.
If I go to the mall and be like a dick face in any kind of way, security will fucking throw me out in a second. You could go to a mall and hand out copies of the fucking Constitution, and they will throw you out because that is not behavior that they tolerate. But somehow these people step through a fucking free speech loophole and stand out there and picket all these things. To me, it's not a question of right or wrong.
I'm going to try to convince you why that loophole is necessary.
It's necessary because of the tyranny of men.
It is. And to suddenly say, well, can we have both? The answer is no. You cannot seal that loophole because, you know what? Sometimes loophole is like any system that you have. Let's say a water system that distributes water to all the houses. Mm-hmm. Most of those systems have somewhere between 20% to 50% loss in water. There are holes everywhere. Half the time, like in Montreal, it's 50% loss. So it just goes all over the place. But those are still acceptable losses because the solution of saying, well, let us make sure that there is not ever one leak, makes it so that, well, what kind of material would you need to do that? And probably, let's say that those materials are suddenly unsafe. What a crazy compromise that you've made. You've made literally the worst compromise you could have, when you could just say, we have to work within the constraints of a system that is designed to both prevent tyranny, but also, unfortunately, promote stupidity at the same time, like arbitrarily. The decisions that people make will be made arbitrarily through a system where any individual is free to say what they want. Mm-hmm. And any time a person removes that ability, then all of a sudden it only paints a future picture where anyone else can do that as well. Mm-hmm. We use these laws and with a certain logic, and the logic and the rationale can continually be applied to justify all kinds of things. So at first I could just say, well, we have to stop these guys because they were offensive at a protest. And then next thing you say, well, we want to remove this, the people protesting the fact that the government is saying that, is saying lies. We're like, you can't say that. That's unpatriotic.
I don't know, but look at it like this. My main point is that look at the idea of the protest during Republican or Democratic conventions or whenever the president comes into town. It's like, you could protest, but you've got to do it in a free speech zone down the fucking road.
Yeah, but the free speech zone is also a huge problem because I'm like, what?
Absolutely, I completely agree.
You need to have protests be possible. You need to be able to do it everywhere. Protests must be you must be able to do it in front of a person's damn door.
But don't you see, free speech is already dead, man. And these people are just
and
stepping,
you just want no, you want to keep killing
it. These the people that pick at these funerals, they're just pissing all over the corpse. That's what they're doing.
No,
they're doing is they're raping. They are raping the ideals behind
it's
it.
It's not dead. All right. If you think that it's dead, I think that you need to take a couple visits to places where it really is dead.
No, I'm saying
you got a good bitch.
We do have a good. We contemplated what it would be like for us in China, and it would be brief. That's what it would be.
We would have one podcast, and then it would disappear from the webs forever. You know?
Yeah.
Google don't take a picture of that. I think that kind of the secret deal that Google makes with China is like, we will keep no record of people that you eliminate their information on their sites. Like, yeah. They probably have that arrangement. You don't think they do? I bet you they do.
Yeah, but I bet you they put a little black back hole in there, and the dudes from Google sit there and look at it, and they're just like, wow.
Yeah, probably. I don't doubt it. I'm just saying the deal was probably made. I just didn't say if it was honored. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a deal cooking, bitch. Everybody got a deal cooking.
True that.
Anyways, I just want to go back to trying to just, I don't know, change your mind about the subject of whether or not you should put any of these, fix these loopholes, because you seem to think that society is on this brink of a complete freedom loss. I'm saying that the boat is shaky, but it is not time to jump overboard with a little tiny swim thing saying, like, you know, every man for himself.
I'm just lamenting the fact that there is such a ridiculous contradiction in that, and that in some ways our free speech is getting so suffocated in all sorts of different ways.
But I think the most fundamental way in which free speech is no longer suffocated is that, unlike, say, my counterpart would have been 20 years ago, I am free to say what I think. Because even back then, people weren't free to tell you what they thought. They had to work within a particular context. And to broadcast that, you had to play by the rules. We play by no rules.
Well, figure this. Remember back in the 60s during the Red Scare?
Yeah, exactly. Perfect example.
You weren't allowed. Yeah, that's why. Yeah, I mean, you want to ask. You see all those old TV shows where the guy's like, "Oh, I don't talk politics." There's a fucking reason. You fucking talk.
Oh, yeah.
You talk politics, and you could have a neighbor that would basically turn you over as a commie bastard.
Yep. Your political views were something that was kind of dangerous. That's what I mean by freedom of speech.
Yeah.
While we worry and we lament about its applications legally. Really what it boils down to is we're still, at the end of the day, we're going to say what we want. And yeah, you can try to stop me. Just try.
Yep.
Try to freaking stop me. And that's what's going to be really funny, I think, is that we're becoming accustomed to saying what we want and to distribute that how we want it. And anytime people are going to start tweaking with that, we're going to lose our minds. You know, that's one of those freedoms that you just can't mess with. And you know, anytime that's kind of threatened, yeah, you're going to feel that pinch. You're going to be like, whoa. Excuse me? Like, you don't want me to, you know, defame or talk against religion? You're going to throw me in jail? I don't think so. And it's why it's really interesting to see that even people who are religious themselves, and at least in the States, are like, are you insane? Like, that's their attitude. That's how strong their idea of freedom of speech is. It's just that it's so strong that sometimes you don't really think about what you're doing and what you're allowing, potentially. Like, you have to fight hard to make sure that free speech is always free. Always. That you can say what you want. And sometimes the things that you're going to say when you want to say it, it's going to sound horrible. Like, your mind is warped and corrupt, and we got to see it, and it was gross. But that's a necessary part of the process of vomiting your true thoughts out loud. And I'm like, that's why I'm always going to stand 100% behind free speech. Not even a second thought about it. Should human beings be free to say what they think? Good God, yes. Good God, yes.